This is Yorgo Saton to continue. This is the second tape. And I have an apology. I did not date the tape number one, which was recorded just prior to this. This is mid-afternoon on the 5th month, May, 11th day, 1992, in your counting. We are covering the subject of silent weapons for quiet wars. I feel it is one of the most important subject that we can present for your consideration, for it gives you clues to timing. The original documentation was from the late 40s, so you can see that the elite have had a long period of time while you slept to be at their dirty work, and they have really pulled off some good dirty tricks. I had just made comment about if people had really cared about their fellow man, they would control these appetites of greed and procreation, etc. But it isn't, I suppose, to be that way. And since most of the general public will not exercise restraint, there are only two alternatives to reduce the economic inductance of the system. One, let the populace bludgeon each other to death in war, which will only result in a total destruction of the living earth. Two, take control of the world by the use of economic silent weapons in a form of quiet warfare, and therefore reduce the economic inductance of the world to a safe level by a process of benevolent slavery and genocide. They've got it all figured out, and you're marching straight into it, just marching as fast as the drum beats. This latter option has been taken as the obviously better option. At this point, it should be crystal clear to the listener why absolute secrecy about the silent weapons is absolutely mandatory and necessary. The general public refuses to improve its own mentality and its faith in its fellow man. Therefore, it has become a herd of proliferating barbarians and, so to speak, a blight on the face of the earth. Now, you think Hatton may be speaking this. This is being spoken by human professors and instructors to the little clandestine army that will bring this to be. And he goes on, and so to speak, a blight on the face of the earth. They do not care enough about economic science to learn why they have not been able to avoid war despite religious morality and their religions or religious or self-gratifying refusal to deal with earthly problems. This renders the solution of the earthly problem unreachable by them. It is left to those few of us who are truly willing to think and survive as the fittest to survive, to solve the problem for themselves as the few who really care. In other words, the elite. Otherwise, exposure of the silent weapon would destroy our only hope of preserving the seed of future true humanity. Those are their words. Please remember, those are their words, and they have all but pulled it off. Now, we're going to move right on through this a little bit because there are several pages of mathematical equations and diagrams and so forth that I have no way of getting onto this tape, but you will note that it has been published. Or at least I had asked that it be. I don't know where we are with it. I'll check into it. And if it has not made it into some publication, I will ask that it be prepared so that ones can get it. We'll move on to what they call household industry. The industries of finance or banking, manufacturing and government, real counterparts of the pure industries of capital, goods and services, are easily defined because they are generally logically structured. Because of this, the processes can be described mathematically, and their technical coefficients can be easily deduced. This, however, is not the case with the service industry, known as the household industry. And let's look, let's try to set up a little bit of a household model. Well, actually, there's no way that I can do that so that it can be seen visually from just an audio tape. So we'll talk about the problem which a theoretical economist faces, is that the consumer preferences of any household is not that easily predictable, and the technical coefficients of any one household tend to be a non-linear, very complex and variable function of income, prices, and so forth. So we'll just go ahead and move along. These can be easily diagrammed, but not by description. Computer information derived from the use of the universal product code in conjunction with credit card purchases as an individual household identifier could change this state of affairs. But the UPC method is not yet available on a national or even a significant regional scale. So right there you have it, listeners. It is now. When this was written, it was not. It is everywhere now. It is the rule of the land, all lands, not just yours. We're talking about those little zebra stripe things on every container of anything that you get. And now they're adding it to the mail system, etc. To compensate for this data deficiency, which is no longer a deficiency, an alternate indirect approach of analysis has been adopted, known as economic shock testing. This method, widely used in the aircraft in manufacturing industry, develops an aggregate statistical sort of data. Now, you listeners are going to be able to go back now and recognize this in practice, in your memory, in practice, being used on you as we move on through this. So please think back as we move along here. Applied to economics, this means that all of the households in one region or in the whole nation are studied as a group or a class rather than individually. And the mass behavior rather than individual behavior is used to discover useful estimates of the technical coefficients governing the economic structure of the hypothetical single household industry. In other words, they would thrust advertising at you, they would have polls, they would make phone calls, they would do all of these studies, and then began to computerize different elements, different, there have been some excellent programs produced on marketing and product utilization on some of your public broadcasting systems that really has brought this into true visual focus on how products are received in different parts of the country, in different types of household, ethnic groups, etc. And from this data can be gleaned national preferences and how far they have you buried in ignorance and so forth. And notice in the industry flow diagrams, if you get these papers, that you have accessible measurements in terms of selling prices and total sales of commodities. Because you have moved so many decades beyond the publishing of this, I personally don't see much bother in getting the diagrams, because they just don't, they aren't going to help you that much. I would rather you have mental pictures from what has happened to be able to see where you are. One method of evaluating the technical coefficients of the household industry depends upon shocking the prices of a commodity and noting the changes in the sales of all the commodities. So let's look a little bit at economic shock testing. In recent times, but remember, this is 1947, the application of operations research to the study of the public economy has been obvious for anyone who understands the principles of shock testing. So now it can be easily understood, you see, because you've all experienced it. In the shock testing of an aircraft's airframe, the recoil impulse of firing a gun mounted on that airframe causes a shock wave, or multiple shock waves, in that structure, which tell aviation engineers the conditions under which parts of that airplane, or the whole airplane, or its wings will start to vibrate or flutter like a guitar string, if you will, that kind of frequency vibration, or a flute reed. A tuning fork is a good example. And finally, disintegrate or fall apart in flight. Economic engineers achieve the same result in studying the behavior of the economy and the consumer public by carefully selecting a staple commodity, such as beef or coffee, gasoline, something that is utilized by the mass. Sugar is a good one. And then causing a sudden change or shock in its pricing or its availability. You know, we'll kick in some scarcities here and false. Or otherwise, we're going to raise the price and see what happens. So now you look at these sudden changes, and you end up kicking everybody's budget. And then the perception goes. The buying habits are now out of shape. People don't know what to do. They want the product. Will they pay more? What will they do? The objective of such studies is to acquire the know-how to set the public economy into a predictable state of motion or change. Even a controlled, self-destructive state of motion, which will convince the public that certain expert people should take control of the money system and reestablish security rather than liberty and justice. In other words, I demand that the government do. There should be a law. Let's insist on one. Take all the guns. Do in all the masses. We have bought the government. Let it work for us. In other words, you line up to demand that these controls be laid against you. So let's see what happens. When the subject citizens are rendered unable to control their financial affairs, they, of course, become totally enslaved. And then what happens? They become a source of very cheap labor. Because if you cannot have funds and you're accustomed to it, you will take any job that comes along at regardless of the price being paid to you, or you will be hungry. And as the welfare lines lengthen, and the resources end, I think you get the picture. So back to the page. Not only the prices of commodities, but also the availability of labor can be used as the means of shock testing. Labor strikes deliver excellent test shocks to an economy, especially in the critical service areas of trucking, that's transportation, communication, public utilities, that's energy, water, garbage collection, and so forth. And you've just experienced all of those. You've gone through all of those. And the testing that came out of every one of those and how they were handled from your air control towers to your transportation system, your airlines. Look back and remember how the masses responded and what the government did under demand to, again, make available those services to you. By the shock testing, it's found that there is a direct relationship between the availability of money flowing in an economy and the psychological outlook and response of masses of people dependent upon that availability. Let's look for an example. There is a measurable quantitative relationship, for instance, between the price of gasoline and the probability that a person would experience a headache, feel a need to watch a violent movie, smoke a cigarette, or go to a tavern for a mug of beer. Wouldn't seem like it, but there is. And it's most interesting that by observing and measuring the economic modes by which the public tries to run from their problems and escape from reality, and by applying the mathematical theory of operations research, it's possible to program computers to predict the most probable combination of created events, or shocks in their terminology, which will then bring about a complete control and subjugation of the public through a subversion of the public economy. In other words, by shaking that plum tree. I believe it's quite clear that by setting up these models and measuring each one, the cause and then the effect or the reaction to it, and then the final response regarding it, it's very easy to end up with the proper data of how to institute control in these areas. So let's look at a little bit of an introduction to economic amplifiers. Amplifier being another term, you see, that's applied to the electronics industry. And economic amplifiers are the active components of economic engineering. The basic characteristic of any amplifier, mechanical, electrical, or economic, is that it receives an input control signal and delivers energy from an independent energy source to a specified output terminal in a predictable relationship to that input control signal. It's just like a sound system that amplifies vocal sound or sound. The simplest form of economic amplifier is a device called advertising. If a person is spoken to, say, by a television advertiser as if he were a 12-year-old, then, of course, guess what? Due to suggestibility, he will, with a certain probability, respond or react to that suggestion with the uncritical response of a 12-year-old, and will reach into his economic reservoir and deliver its energy, in other words, money out of his pocket, and hand it over to buy that product on impulse when he passes it in the store. And sometimes your advertisements are so nauseating to me as we observe them. But you begin to first laugh at them and then counter as ridiculous, and then lo and behold, you will go down and put good money on the counter for junk. An economic amplifier may have several inputs and outputs. Its response might be instantaneous or delayed. It's just like playing with a sound amplifier. Input, output. You can have as many inputs as your piece of machinery will hold, and as equally as many outputs, or more, just by lining up speakers. And from one microphone, you can have infinite numbers of speakers. Well, maybe they're finite numbers, depending on your outlets. So you have to look at these things and consider this amplifier and its inputs and outputs, and consider its response, for it can be instantaneous or it can be delayed. Just as with playbacks or slow motion or any kind of manipulation, you can have this controlled. Its circuit symbol might actually be a rotary switch if its options are exclusive, qualitative, go or no go. In other words, a toggle switch would do in those instances. Or it can have its parametric input-output relationship specified by a whole matrix with internal energy sources represented. Whatever its form might be, its purpose is to govern the flow of energy from a source to an output. Let us call it a sink, an output sink container. It's a term used, so sink is adequate. And it's in direct relationship to an input control signal. And for this reason, it's called an active circuit element or component. Economic amplifiers fall into classes called strategies. And in comparison with electronic amplifiers, the specific internal functions of an economic amplifier are called logistical instead of electrical. Therefore, we have economic amplifiers not only delivering power gain, but also, in effect, are used to cause changes in the economic circuitry. In the design of an economic amplifier, we must have some idea of at least five functions, which are the available input signals, the desired output control objectives, the strategic objective, the available economic power sources, and the logistical options. The processes of defining and evaluating these factors and incorporating the economic amplifier into an economic system has been popularly called game theory. Doesn't it make you feel silly that they use this on you? The design of an economic amplifier begins with a specification of the power level of the output, which can range from personal to national. I to you, or I to a microphone on a national network, for instance. The second condition is accuracy of response. That is, how accurately the output action is a function of the input commands. High gain combined with strong feedback helps to deliver the required precision. In other words, you're going to have some feedback. And most of the error will be in the input data signal. Wouldn't seem that way, but it is. What is in comes back out, you see. Personal input data tends to be specific, me to you, while national input data has to be statistical, or it won't be received. So let's look at some inputs. And they're very simple. They're your old how, whos, and whats, you see. What, when, where, how, why, and who. These are the guidelines the little working men for journalism, authors, breaking down any problem. These are your little working men. And you're going to have these questions answered in every instance of input. Your general sources of information to get this are telephone taps, surveillance, analysis even of garbage, behavior of children in school. These are four major sources of information. You may not be aware of it other than little specific studies that kind of make it onto the news. But you see at all your recycling centers, etc., and your garbage pickup, there are always studies being done as to what is thrown out as far as packaging, reclaimed items, recycled items, and you can always judge where you're headed by the responsive behavior of the school children, and they are in a given set of guidelined control where they can be easily studied. The standard of living is judged by food, clothing, shelter, and transportation. That's what affects all of you. All of you require these four things. And in social contacts, telephones, through itemized records of calls, family, through marriage certificates, birth certificates, and so forth, lot of information gathered from those things. From friends and associates, memberships in organizations, who belongs to what? Checking out political affiliations. You see, these are all a matter of record. So let's look at the personal paper trail that you leave for everybody to see. Through the personal paper trail, you can come right down to knowing the personal buying habits and personal consumer preferences. And you can get this through checking accounts, credit card purchases, and tagged credit card purchases. Sounds like the same thing, doesn't it? But that's not so. This is the credit card purchase of products bearing that UPC, nice little universal product zebra code. Everything is entered into computers. If you think you are not in the system and are not marked by the beast, you better just stop right now and consider what has happened. They want you to refuse to accept this mark. And yet the mark of the beast that is spoken of in spiritual reality is that which impacts the soul. Do not allow these things to distract your soul journey of intent. You are already marked before your birth in this system. Hear me, before your birth. So you're going to have to live within this system, function within this system, and grow up through this system if you're going to change anything. Standing out there saying, I will not get involved in the system, is exactly what they want, because that is like painting a big red bullseye right between your eyes for them to shoot at. Only they won't shoot at a bullseye. They will slowly kill you while they drain your blood for their use. So don't be foolish, precious ones. Now, they also gather great amounts of information by your assets. Everybody's assets. They can go into checking accounts, savings accounts, real estate, business, automobiles, safety deposits at banks, your investments in the stock market, your withdrawals from the stock market, whatever you're doing. They can follow. How many ones invest in mutual funds versus open stock? It's all out there. It's all in computers. It's all done. It's over. They can look and gain information from your liabilities. Who are your creditors? Who are your enemies? This can be gained especially easily from legal documents. How many loans do you have, and with whom? And what is your consumer credit rating? All they have to do is pick up the phone, and they know everything there is to know about you. They can get it from government sources. They can find it out instantly from the welfare rolls, Social Security, USDA surplus food. Who gets it, who doesn't? Where does it go? What do you do when you're deprived of it because it's been sold away from the nation? It can be gotten from the dole lines, D-O-L-E, you know, on the dole. Good source in the business world is who gets grants and who gets subsidies. I believe it's time to turn this tape to side B. This is Yorko Saton to continue. This is the second tape. And I have an apology. I did not date the tape number one, which was recorded just prior to this. This is mid-afternoon on the 5th month, May, 11th day, 1992, in your counting. We are covering the subject of silent weapons for quiet wars. I feel it is one of the most important subject that we can present for your consideration, for it gives you clues to timing. The original documentation was from the late 40s, so you can see that the elite have had a long period of time while you slept to be at their dirty work, and they have really pulled off some good dirty tricks. I had just made comment about if people had really cared about their fellow man, they would control these appetites of greed and procreation, etc. But it isn't, I suppose, to be that way. And since most of the general public will not exercise restraint, there are only two alternatives to reduce the economic inductance of the system. One, let the populace bludgeon each other to death in war, which will only result in a total destruction of the living earth. Two, take control of the world by the use of economic silent weapons in a form of quiet warfare, and therefore reduce the economic inductance of the world to a safe level by a process of benevolent slavery and genocide. They've got it all figured out, and you're marching straight into it, just marching as fast as the drum beats. This latter option has been taken as the obviously better option. At this point, it should be crystal clear to the listener why absolute secrecy about the silent weapons is absolutely mandatory and necessary. The general public refuses to improve its own mentality and its faith in its fellow man. Therefore, it has become a herd of proliferating barbarians and, so to speak, a blight on the face of the earth. Now, you think Hatton may be speaking this. This is being spoken by human professors and instructors to the little clandestine army that will bring this to be. And he goes on, and so to speak, a blight on the face of the earth. They do not care enough about economic science to learn why they have not been able to avoid war despite religious morality and their religions or religious or self-gratifying refusal to deal with earthly problems. This renders the solution of the earthly problem unreachable by them. It is left to those few of us who are truly willing to think and survive as the fittest to survive, to solve the problem for themselves as the few who really care. In other words, the elite. Otherwise, exposure of the silent weapon would destroy our only hope of preserving the seed of future true humanity. Those are their words. Please remember, those are their words, and they have all but pulled it off. Now, we're going to move right on through this a little bit because there are several pages of mathematical equations and diagrams and so forth that I have no way of getting onto this tape, but you will note that it has been published. Or at least I had asked that it be. I don't know where we are with it. I'll check into it. And if it has not made it into some publication, I will ask that it be prepared so that ones can get it. We'll move on to what they call household industry. The industries of finance or banking, manufacturing and government, real counterparts of the pure industries of capital, goods, and services, are easily defined because they are generally logically structured. Because of this, the processes can be described mathematically, and their technical coefficients can be easily deduced. This, however, is not the case with the service industry, known as the household industry. And let's look, let's try to set up a little bit of a household model. Well, actually, there's no way that I can do that so that it can be seen visually from just an audio tape. So we'll talk about the problem which a theoretical economist faces, is that the consumer preferences of any household is not that easily predictable, and the technical coefficients of any one household tend to be a non-linear, very complex and variable function of income, prices, and so forth. So we'll just go ahead and move along. These can be easily diagrammed, but not by description. Computer information derived from the use of the universal product code in conjunction with credit card purchases as an individual household identifier could change this state of affairs. But the UPC method is not yet available on a national or even a significant regional scale. So right there you have it, listeners. It is now. When this was written, it was not. It is everywhere now. It is the rule of the land, all lands, not just yours. We're talking about those little zebra stripe things on every container of anything that you get. And now they're adding it to the mail system, etc. To compensate for this data deficiency, which is no longer a deficiency, an alternate indirect approach of analysis has been adopted, known as economic shock testing. This method, widely used in the aircraft and manufacturing industry, develops an aggregate statistical sort of data. Now, you listeners are going to be able to go back now and recognize this in practice, in your memory, in practice, being used on you as we move on through this. So please think back as we move along here. Applied to economics, this means that all of the households in one region or in the whole nation are studied as a group or a class rather than individually. And the mass behavior rather than individual behavior is used to discover useful estimates of the technical coefficients governing the economic structure of the hypothetical single household industry. In other words, they would thrust advertising at you, they would have polls, they would make phone calls, they would do all of these studies, and then began to computerize different elements, there have been some excellent programs produced on marketing and product utilization on some of your public broadcasting systems that really has brought this into true visual focus on how products are received in different parts of the country, in different types of household, ethnic groups, etc. And from this data can be gleaned national preferences and how far they have you buried in ignorance and so forth. And notice in the industry flow diagrams, if you get these papers, that you have accessible measurements in terms of selling prices and total sales of commodities. Because you have moved so many decades beyond the publishing of this, I personally don't see much bother in getting the diagrams, because they just don't. They aren't going to help you that much. I would rather you have mental pictures from what has happened to be able to see where you are. One method of evaluating the technical coefficients of the household industry depends upon shocking the prices of a commodity and noting the changes in the sales of all the commodities. So let's look a little bit at economic shock testing. In recent times, but remember, this is 1947, the application of operations research to the study of the public economy has been obvious for anyone who understands the principles of shock testing. So now it can be easily understood, you see, because you've all experienced it. In the shock testing of an aircraft's airframe, the recoil impulse of firing a gun mounted on that airframe causes a shock wave, or multiple shock waves, in that structure, which tell aviation engineers the conditions under which parts of that airplane, or the whole airplane, or its wings will start to vibrate or flutter like a guitar string, if you will, that kind of frequency vibration, or a flute reed. A tuning fork is a good example. And finally, disintegrate or fall apart in flight. Economic engineers achieve the same result in studying the behavior of the economy and the consumer public by carefully selecting a staple commodity, such as beef or coffee, gasoline, something that is utilized by the mass. Sugar is a good one. And then causing a sudden change or shock in its pricing or its availability. You know, we'll kick in some scarcities here and false or otherwise, we're going to raise the price and see what happens. So now you look at these sudden changes and you end up kicking everybody's budget. And then the perception goes. The buying habits are now out of shape. People don't know what to do. They want the product. Will they pay more? What will they do? The objective of such studies is to acquire the know-how to set the public economy into a predictable state of motion or change. Even a controlled, self-destructive state of motion, which will convince the public that certain expert people should take control of the money system and reestablish security rather than liberty and justice. In other words, I demand that the government do. There should be a law. Let's insist on one. Take all the guns. Do in all the masses. We have bought the government. Let it work for us. In other words, you line up to demand that these controls be laid against you. So let's see what happens. When the subject citizens are rendered unable to control their financial affairs, they, of course, become totally enslaved. And then what happens? They become a source of very cheap labor. Because if you cannot have funds and you're accustomed to it, you will take any job that comes along at regardless of the price being paid to you, or you will be hungry. And as the welfare lines lengthen and the resources end, I think you get the picture. So back to the page. Not only the prices of commodities, but also the availability of labor can be used as the means of shock testing. Labor strikes deliver excellent test shocks to an economy, especially in the critical service areas of trucking, that's transportation, communication, public utilities, that's energy, water, garbage collection, and so forth. And you've just experienced all of those. You've gone through all of those. And the testing that came out of every one of those and how they were handled from your air control towers to your transportation system, your airlines. Look back and remember how the masses responded and what the government did under demand to again make available those services to you. By the shock testing, it's found that there is a direct relationship between the availability of money flowing in an economy and the psychological outlook and response of masses of people dependent upon that availability. Let's look for an example. There is a measurable quantitative relationship, for instance, between the price of gasoline and the probability that a person would experience a headache, feel a need to watch a violent movie, smoke a cigarette, or go to a tavern for a mug of beer. Wouldn't seem like it, but there is. And it's most interesting that by observing and measuring the economic modes by which the public tries to run from their problems and escape from reality, and by applying the mathematical theory of operations research, it's possible to program computers to predict the most probable combination of created events, or shocks in their terminology, which will then bring about a complete control and subjugation of the public through a subversion of the public economy. In other words, by shaking that plum tree. I believe it's quite clear that by setting up these models and measuring each one, the cause and then the effect or the reaction to it and then the final response regarding it, it's very easy to end up with the proper data of how to institute control in these areas. So let's look at a little bit of an introduction to economic amplifiers. Amplifier being another term, you see, that's applied to the electronics industry. And economic amplifiers are the active components of economic engineering. The basic characteristic of any amplifier, mechanical, electrical, or economic, is that it receives an input control signal and delivers energy from an independent energy source to a specified output terminal in a predictable relationship to that input control signal. It's just like a sound system that amplifies vocal sound or sound. The simplest form of economic amplifier is a device called advertising. If a person is spoken to, say, by a television advertiser as if he were a 12-year-old, then, of course, guess what? Due to suggestibility, he will, with a certain probability, respond or react to that suggestion with the uncritical response of a 12-year-old and will reach into his economic reservoir and deliver its energy, in other words, money out of his pocket, and hand it over to buy that product on impulse when he passes it in the store. And sometimes your advertisements are so nauseating to me as we observe them, but you begin to first laugh at them and then counter as ridiculous, and then lo and behold, you will go down and put good money on the counter for junk. An economic amplifier may have several inputs and outputs. Its response might be instantaneous or delayed. It's just like playing with a sound amplifier. Input, output. You can have as many inputs as your piece of machinery will hold and equally as many outputs or more. Just by lining up speakers. And from one microphone, you can have infinite numbers of speakers. Well, maybe they're finite numbers, depending on your outlets. So you have to look at these things and consider this amplifier and its inputs and outputs and consider its response, for it can be instantaneous or it can be delayed. Just as with playbacks or slow motion or any kind of manipulation, you can have this controlled. Its circuit symbol might actually be a rotary switch if its options are exclusive, qualitative, go or no go. In other words, a toggle switch would do in those instances. Or it can have its parametric input-output relationship specified by a whole matrix with internal energy sources represented. Whatever its form might be, its purpose is to govern the flow of energy from a source to an output. Let us call it a sink, an output sink container. It's a term used, so sink is adequate. And it's in direct relationship to an input control signal. And for this reason, it's called an active circuit element or component. Economic amplifiers fall into classes called strategies. And in comparison with electronic amplifiers, the specific internal functions of an economic amplifier are called logistical instead of electrical. Therefore, we have economic amplifiers not only delivering power gain, but also, in effect, are used to cause changes in the economic circuitry. In the design of an economic amplifier, we must have some idea of at least five functions, which are the available input signals, the desired output control objectives, the strategic objective, the available economic power sources, and the logistical options. The processes of defining and evaluating these factors and incorporating the economic amplifier into an economic system has been popularly called game theory. Doesn't it make you feel silly that they use this on you? The design of an economic amplifier begins with a specification of the power level of the output, which can range from personal to national. I to you, or I to a microphone on a national network, for instance. The second condition is accuracy of response. That is, how accurately the output action is a function of the input commands. High gain combined with strong feedback helps to deliver the required precision. In other words, you're going to have some feedback. And most of the error will be in the input data signal. Wouldn't seem that way, but it is. What is in comes back out, you see. Personal input data tends to be specific, me to you, while national input data has to be statistical, or it won't be received. So let's look at some inputs. And they're very simple. They're your old how, whos, and whats, you see. What, when, where, how, why, and who. These are the guidelines, the little working men for journalism, authors, breaking down any problem. These are your little working men. And you're going to have these questions answered in every instance of input. Your general sources of information to get this are telephone taps, surveillance, analysis even of garbage, behavior of children in school. These are four major sources of information. You may not be aware of it other than little specific studies that kind of make it onto the news. But you see at all your recycling centers, etc., and your garbage pickup, there are always studies being done as to what is thrown out as far as packaging, reclaimed items, recycled items, and you can always judge where you're headed by the responsive behavior of the school children, and they are in a given set of guidelined control where they can be easily studied. The standard of living is judged by food, clothing, shelter, and transportation. That's what affects all of you. All of you require these four things. And in social contacts, telephones through itemized records of calls, family through marriage certificates, birth certificates, and so forth, a lot of information gathered from those things. From friends and associates, memberships in organizations, who belongs to what? Checking out political affiliations. You see, these are all a matter of record. So let's look at the personal paper trail that you leave for everybody to see. Through the personal paper trail, you can come right down to knowing the personal buying habits and personal consumer preferences. And you can get this through checking accounts, credit card purchases, and tagged credit card purchases. Sounds like the same thing, doesn't it? But that's not so. This is the credit card purchase of products bearing that UPC, nice little universal product zebra code. Everything is entered into computers. If you think you are not in the system and are not marked by the beast, you better just stop right now and consider what has happened. They want you to refuse to accept this mark. And yet the mark of the beast that is spoken of in spiritual reality is that which impacts the soul. Do not allow these things to distract your soul journey of intent. You are already marked before your birth in this system. Hear me, before your birth. So you're going to have to live within this system, function within this system, and grow up through this system if you're going to change anything. Standing out there saying, I will not get involved in the system, is exactly what they want, because that is like painting a big red bullseye right between your eyes for them to shoot at. Only they won't shoot at a bullseye. They will slowly kill you while they drain your blood for their use. So don't be foolish, precious ones. Now, they also gather great amounts of information by your assets. Everybody's assets. They can go into checking accounts, savings accounts, real estate, business, automobiles, safety deposits at banks, your investments in the stock market, your withdrawals from the stock market, whatever you're doing, they can follow. How many ones invest in mutual funds versus open stock? It's all out there. It's all in computers. It's all done. It's over. They can look and gain information from your liabilities. Who are your creditors? Who are your enemies? This can be gained especially easily from legal documents. How many loans do you have and with whom? And what is your consumer credit rating? All they have to do is pick up the phone and they know everything there is to know about you. They can get it from government sources. They can find it out instantly from the welfare rolls, Social Security, USDA surplus food. Who gets it? Who doesn't? Where does it go? What do you do when you're deprived of it because it's been sold away from the nation? It can be gotten from the Dole lines, D-O-L-E, you know, on the Dole. Good source in the business world is who gets grants and who gets subsidies. I believe it's time to turn this tape to side B.